Welcome to the NCO Journal podcast. This is a podcast series where we discuss published articles with authors and provide a forum for the open exchange of ideas, information, and solutions. I'm your host, Staff Sergeant Brandon Cox, Senior Editor of the NCO Journal. With us is Chaga Zapata, the Managing Editor, and Sergeant First Class Osvaldo Akite, the NCOIC. Today we discuss the article, Female Senior NCO Presence in the Army, by Command Sergeant Major Marisa Saucedo, the Command Sergeant Major for the 420th Transportation Battalion, and special guest, Command Sergeant Major Tammy Everett, the Commandant for the NCO Leadership Center of Excellence in Fort Bliss, Texas. As the author for the article, Sergeant Major Saucedo, could you please kick things off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Sergeant Major Saucedo here. I am a Compo 3 soldier, which is in the Army Reserve. Been in service for 27 years. So I joined in 97 and have a 88 Mike or 88 Zulu now and 42 Alpha. I hold both those MOSs. I am the only female in my family to serve, and my legacy goes back to World War II. I actually have an uncle who's buried at Normandy. He was a bombardier who was shot down. I'm also just on the civilian side. I work for the Army as a civilian, doing now with the new IPAG, the Integrated Prevention Advisory Group, as a lead prevention specialist.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. And our special guest, Command Sergeant Major Everett, could you please tell us a bit about yourself?
Sergeant Major Tammy Everett here. I am the Commandant of the Non-Commissioned Officer Leadership Center of Excellence and the Sergeant's Major Academy at Fort Bliss, Texas. I've been in the Army just over 28 years now, and I've been in position over a year.
To kind of start the discussion off, Sergeant Major Saucedo, could you tell us what initially inspired you to write this article?
It was a few things, you know. I will say I really didn't start to take notice about being a female in senior leadership until I was a first sergeant. I used to take notice, like, you know, at conferences, YTBs, which are yearly training briefs, things like that, being a transporter. I was one of the only females, but it didn't really dawn on me really until I got to the academy. And as at the academy, you hear numbers, right? My class was 523. And of that, we had approximately, I think it was 92 females. And, you know, you start to hear numbers like, oh, you're the 1% of the 1%. And you're like, well, what does that mean? And as a reserve soldier, it was even smaller, right? The population that was there at the academy. And so you kind of start thinking like, wow, like I'm here. You know, one, it's very humbling to be even selected to go to the resident course as a reserve soldier. But then you really start looking like, wow, like at the females, you know, this small population, and we made up approximately 18%, which mirrors, you know, what the Army's population is of women. So part of me was like, was that deliberate? Did they want to, you know, make sure that there was 18% roughly, right, of females at the academy that were, you know, also like make up the demographic of the Army? And then, you know, walking through the halls and, you know, they're in the auditorium and it's, you know, I'm seeing all these pictures on the wall and I'm, you know, I'm like, wow, like they're all men, you know. And then of course, one of the writing assignments they give you is your professional writing paper and, you know, looking at the topics. And I just kind of started Googling and I was like, yep, this is it. Like, this is, I want to talk about this. It's near and dear, you know, not just being a female, but also, you know, a female minority and what it means to me, you know, to my family. And that's kind of, I guess you could say, what inspired me. And it's funny that when I started writing this paper, because, you know, you started at the beginning of the year and you turn it in at the end, my paper towards the end, when I found out Sergeant Major Everett was coming into position, I actually had to redirect where I was going with my paper, because one of the hits was, you know, that there is no, you know, commandant, there's never been, you know, a female. And then it was, as I was finishing up the last portion, I was like, oh my gosh, we have a female coming in. I need to redirect. And, you know, and then it really changed my focus. But I think what that did was it allowed me to look a little more open and say, okay, yeah, we are now coming in the right direction, but we still, you know, we've got to do more. So it was a combination of things that really inspired me to write this article.
Sergeant Major Everett, I wonder, what are your thoughts after hearing her talk about, you know, you becoming the first female commandant at the Sergeant Major's Academy, and some of that history that you've been making with the military intelligence community?
It's humbling. If I look back, you know, to what Sergeant Major Salceda is talking, you know, if I go back and I reflect, I'm like, yeah, I was the only female in the room, but I never really paid attention to it. I started to pay attention to it a little bit in my previous position at ICO, but it, I will be honest, it really didn't hit me until I came here. And I just received a lot of feedback from over the entire Army, all three components and retirees, of how proud they were of me, and they didn't even know me. So then it really sunk in how important representation is. You know, I'm just honored that people know me, quite honestly. And you think enough about me to write about me in your article. But I am just grateful for the opportunity to serve. I like to think that I got here based solely on my work ethic and my ability, you know, to lead a team and produce results. I look at it as the Army just got lucky that I'm a female. But I just think it's great. I think it took a lot of guts, you know, to write this paper for Sergeant Major Salceda. It's very interesting to read. I applaud her. And now being the commandant, knowing that you wrote this paper while you were in school, I mean, it just makes me even more proud of the education that we're giving our senior non-commissioned officers and just how talented they are.
This question is for Sergeant Major Salceda. In your thesis, you state that if the Army does not adapt and incorporate more female senior leaders, the inaction could hamper recruiting. How do you think that we can increase female recruitment in the United States Army? And is this an issue that the Army can solve?
Yes. So first I'll talk about like increasing female recruitment in the Army. So I think it was about a year ago, our marketing materials changed. You know, we started seeing females as tank commanders, you know, or in combat arms positions, where prior ads and marketing materials, you know, those recruiting, they only showed males in those roles, you know, and they showed females in, you know, clerical positions, maybe medical. I think that is a step in the right direction, because those commercials and those advertisements, right? Those are going out to the high school students, to those middle schoolers, even elementary schoolers, to those, you know, young girls like me who were playing with G.I. Joes. And it's like, oh, wow, I could do that too. You know, and that's, I think, one of the ways, right? Starting with recruiting, you talk about in high school and all of those things, is these positions, you know, now since I think it's 2016, you know, that the combat arms roles are opened up to females, like, that's a step in the right direction. Is this an issue that the Army can solve? I think yes. I think we start with nesting ourselves under, you know, in 2017, the Women, Peace, and Security Act came out, right? That from the Department of State. And in 2019, you've got the U.S. strategy. I think we nest ourselves in that. I think being deliberate with inclusivity and diversity. Diversity is a beautiful thing. That is what makes our Army the greatest Army in the world, is because of our diversity. And the more and more diverse we get, the more inclusive we get, we'll get away from those groupthink at the senior levels. Prime example at the Academy. It's deliberate when they put different compos in the classrooms, when they put different CMFs, the international partners. It's amazing. Like, if could you imagine if there was just 15 88 mics in the room? I would not have learned what I did then if it would have just been people who thought like me and only had like my experiences. So I think with the recruiting piece, we have to get creative. I think we, like I said, starting with those marketing materials and more mentorship and coaching starting at the junior levels, right? Because in order to be a senior leader, right, you've got to be in for a while. Well, what does that take? I've been fortunate to have some amazing mentors in my career, both male and female, officer and enlisted. And I think that's what it takes is, you know, reaching down and pulling those that, you know, have the potential and want, you know, they're hungry. We got to develop those soldiers as well.
Thank you. And Sergeant Major Everett, I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that, how we can increase female recruitment. And is this an issue that we can solve?
I think it's an issue that we can definitely help. It's a recruitment issue. It's a retention issue. It's a total Army issue. So I would say leaders like Sergeant Major Salceda and other senior female leaders, we have to help with recruitment. Young citizens have to see that there's an opportunity to reach a high level. So they have to see themselves in that senior leader. And then to Sergeant Major Salceda's point, mentorship and coaching has to happen because we have to retain females in the Army if we want to increase the level of females in senior leader positions. I will just say, and I believe this, you know, deep down in my soul, I think we should continue to put people in positions regardless of gender, based solely on the merits and their potential for promotion and their potential for positions of increased responsibility. But I think, unfortunately, we don't have the population, you know, so some rough statistics in the nation, we're about a 50-50 split, male-female. In the Army, total Army, we're about an 80-20 split with 20% being female. So out of that 20% in the Army, I don't know out of that 20% what is deemed a senior leader, but we just don't have the ratio. So one, we got to put them in. We got to keep them. From my perspective, I just see it from a different lens from where I sit. We have a very good group. I was just at the SMA's Leading Change Forum, and there's a photo, the SMMD Sergeant Major, Sergeant Major Jill Crosby, she put it on Facebook. And, you know, there's probably about 20, and she didn't even have all of us in there, 20 nominative level sergeants major. There were probably about five or six that weren't in the photo. So out of all the nominative level positions, there were over probably 125 or so in the room. 25 of those, so, you know, roughly one-fifth, you know, 20%, and I'm doing public math, but 20% were female. And that equals the overall Army's female representation. Remember, I said it was 80-20. So I think we're there, and I'm speaking solely from the sergeant's major perspective and the nominative level. Like, we're there. Our female sergeant majors, they're super competitive. They're getting on slates, you know, to compete. If you want to talk about, you know, combat arms, those type of positions, if you're talking, you know, Corps and ASCC and above, we're building those future sergeants major right now. You know, if they started in 15, 16, you know, we're building them right. They're 8 years in the Army. So they're not even eligible yet for those type of positions. But we have to coach and we have to mentor them to stay in and remain competitive to get those positions. So from where I sit, how I see the Army and the venues where I have the opportunity to be in, we are on par with our overall representation in the Army. If we were less than, you know, if we were like 5% or 10%, I would say maybe we have a problem. But I think we're on par with the Army, and I think we're doing very, very well.
I wanted to talk a little bit about from the recruiter perspective. You know, I was a recruiter. I spent 3 years beating the streets, facing all the challenges that recruiters face. Now, reaching women was always a challenge. You know, I was pretty lucky, and I think I recruited 86 people over the course of my 3 years, and seven of them were women, and that was more than all the other guys. There was four other recruiters in my shop or in my office, And that was all, that was more than all the other guys combined. So a lot of it has to do with earning trust. And I had, you know, being in public affairs too, I had contacts. I had people that I knew who were women who I could use as examples, and I could talk to them and have them talk to the recruits. And so the thing is that the reason I bring this up is I think it's not just it's also a societal issue. You know, when you think about wanting to reach, you know, more women you need to start early on so that you can have more women who go up the ranks and eventually become those senior leaders, right? But you have to reach them early. But society, you know, right now society, the young men, it's the young men who say I want to join the military. You know, you talk to young women, they have other plans, they have other goals in mind. It's a challenge from the recruiting aspect. I think it's important that, you know, we all understand that it's more than just, you know, hey, we need more women to join the military. It's about that there's issues that are associated with that. I don't think that challenge is ever going to be overcome, but I think with the things that Sergeant Major Saucedo is saying, that, you know, now that there's more materials out there showing women in positions of leadership as stand commanders, et cetera, that I think all that is going to show women out there that, look, this is a possibility. This is something that I can do. Anyway, I just wanted to kind of throw that out from the recruiter perspective, because that was something that I did. It was challenging, but you know, I think it's important to the conversation.
I do like what you said and the transparency of, like, yeah, I recruited, 86, and only 7 of those were female. I think now with the recruiting materials, that is now going to open up discussions, right, to those high school students and say, hey, did you know, you know, and showing that the video, the commercial of, you know, the female and the tank commander or things like that, because, you know, people don't know what they don't know. And if for years all they've seen is marketing materials where only males were in those combat arms roles, if that's, you know, what they're looking for, then now it's, you know, from a recruiting perspective, I would say that's where those conversations need to be had. And, you know, getting the word out, if you will, to the high school students across the nation about, hey, these are the opportunities. Look at, you know, and having that data showing, hey, we've got females here, we've got, you know, females there. If this is something that you want to do, you know, sky's the limit, here you are. But until, you know, I think that message is echoed and it's become the norm to say, yeah, females have the opportunity to do all that, they may not know what they don't, you know, or they don't know what they don't know.
Just give an example, if I may. So here, Nickel Co. and the Sergeant Major Academy, we team with the El Paso recruiting station, and they had a specific female, who was on the fence of joining the Army. So the team reached out here, and we put them in a room with 6 female sergeants major. Because, you know, I'm overflowing with sergeants major here on the campus. So we put her in a room with 6 females. And the next week she enlisted in the Army. But it's just giving them that opportunity to have a conversation with someone that can kind of calm their fears and answer their questions. You know, can I have children and still be a soldier? You know, can I be a spouse and still be a soldier? Can I still go to college and be a soldier? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. You can do all of those things. You can be all you can be in the Army. And that's a real statement. It's just not our slogan. It's for real. So it's getting folks, you know, like Sergeant Major Salceda, out there in the community, not just recruiters, because every single soldier is a recruiter. It's how you interact with the community. It's how they see you on and off duty, because everyone knows if you're a soldier or not most of the time. And it's just sharing that story. And then even, you know, our soldiers for life, when they, you know, get off of active duty and they retire, it's what is the message that they're putting back out in the community? So we try to do that here. When I was at ICO, we went on my CG and I went on a hometown recruiting visit. And, you know, we went and I got a lot of questions about, you know, how are you able to be a soldier and, you know, still raise children? And we don't sugarcoat it. It's hard. It's really, really hard. And I probably failed in more ways than I care to admit. We learn as human beings and we grow. So, like, we just have to do a better job. And we get so bogged down with what we do and our mission, we don't open our aperture to say, okay, I have to help build the next cohort of people that will replace me. And some of those do need to be a female future sergeant's major. Because, like she mentioned earlier, it brings a diversity of thought. And diversity of thought is very, very important in the future of our Army.
As I'm listening to the conversation here, it was interesting to me to note that the whole article started with Sergeant Major Salcedo just kind of noticing the number of women in the environment that she was at. But then hearing you, Sergeant Major Everett, talk about in your environment, the female senior NCOs are on par with the Army's population in regards to female and males. You know, and I had seen some of the data beforehand was that since the Army made changes in removing DA photos from the records and going through centralized boards and things like that into a more blind centralized board, there is some data supporting that there has been a 5% increase in female senior NCOs since 2018. And I'm comparing 2018 data to 2022 data. I think the Army has made some changes recently. I agree with Sergeant Major Everett on that. And I think that there is more that can be done. But we've just talked about one of the challenges. So I think maybe it's a good time to talk about some of the other challenges that you guys kind of have already touched on a little bit. I'll just throw these out there and I'll let you all decide which one you want to talk about. But there's a perception that there may be a bias in how the Army promotes. And the other thing that you mentioned, Sergeant Major Everett, was there are some women and men that want to start families. And how does that affect the one more over the other? And is that a challenge that prevents women from continuing to serve and be kind of competitive as they're being reviewed? So I'll throw that out to you, and I'll like to start with you, Sergeant Major Everett, on your maybe talk a little bit more about the other challenges that there are.
Yeah, thanks. I, you know, on the bias, I've sat on many promotion boards, and I will tell you, there is nothing on there that says you have to select a certain percentage of your gender. So I think we are doing a great job when it comes to promoting based on potential and merit. That's from the big Army centralized board system. And then locally, the semi-centralized boards, having ran those as, you know, sat on those as a first sergeant and a battalion sergeant major, you know, same thing. I have no quota as a first sergeant or a sergeant major of how many folks I can recommend for promotion. And then when the promotion points come out for promotion to sergeant and staff sergeant, it's not, you know, how many females have 550 points. It's who has 550 points. That's the cutoff score. And whoever makes that mark gets promoted. So there is no preferential promotions tied to gender. It's solely based on your potential for continued service. And then on the families portion, I have three children total, two of which were in the Army. I'm here. So, I mean, I think I am an example of it doesn't set you back. It doesn't hold you back. Yeah, you get nice 12 weeks of leave, but that's not a showstopper. And even, you know, we're looking throughout TRADOC of, you know, how does that affect someone's attendance at PME? You know, if they're on a profile, postpartum, do they have to take the ACFT? Is there events that are waiverable, non-waiverable? So everyone's trying to make sure we have a system in place that doesn't disadvantage anyone for having a family. So my advice to folks is, there is no right time to have a family. If you want to have one, have one, and everything else will work itself out. It's hard, but it's definitely doable. And if you put forth the same effort and you strive for excellence and you work really hard and you're a great teammate, the promotions will come and you can have a family, be a spouse, be a very successful soldier. You can do all that.
And then to you, Sergeant Major Salcedo, I'll pose it to you. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I appreciate what Sergeant Major Everett mentioned about trade-off, looking at those personnel on profile that are postpartum. That's a huge step in the right direction. I too am a mother. I have two sons, and yet I've been a mother my whole career. And yes, you can. And I, like, as she stated, I'm here. Now, it is challenging, and I will 100% echo that, foot stomp it. I've had huge support in my corner as a single mom. So I've had to rely on others, to help me, whether on deployments, long-term schools, TDYs, those things, but it is doable. So from that perspective of having a family, yes, you can. And I love the fact that now we have parental leave where, males can now take that opportunity to spend time with their newborn, children. That's a huge win. I know a few males who have taken the advantage and the opportunity to utilize that leave, and it made a world of difference. And so I think it's things like that that show, yes, got it, Army's mission will always continue, but we can cover down, or we can, allow you to have that time with your family, after a baby is born, and then you can come back into the fight. Got it. We got your back. We got your six, right? And as far as promotions, I too am in no way, and I know some people in their comments on social media were like, I guess they just read the title and think it's just, we should just throw in females into these positions. And in no way do I support that. Do I mean that? I would like to think that I got to the position that I am because of my knowledge, skills, and abilities, and my resume, if you will. And I have not yet been able to sit on these, boards like Sergeant Major Everett. So to have some of that insight, I think that's amazing. And we need to have those conversations and encourage those females, when those positions nominative, where you have to throw your name in a hat. We need, senior leaders of all, both male and female, have to encourage, if they see potential in a candidate, in a soldier, to say, hey, throw your name in the hat. Whether it's soldier of the quarter board or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's those knowledge, skills, and abilities that I think they need to be forefront. And sometimes I will also say that, depending, on the position, we do have to be mindful of, ensuring, because we are, again, a 80-20 population, which we heard earlier, is we do have to ensure that there are diverse voices at the table. And not just sitting at the table, but they need to, be included to speak and have those ideas and those, breaking away from that groupthink. Now, I know that pictures are, were removed, those DA photos, but perhaps, a way ahead, and I mentioned this in my paper, is that maybe removing names and gender, that could potentially aid in preventing unconscious bias, because that's a thing. We have to acknowledge that there will always be some form of unconscious, implicit bias that will take place for whatever, reason. And I think if we acknowledge that, then once you acknowledge something, then you can be more deliberate in making sure that you are selecting the right candidate, not just because of someone who looks and thinks like you.
I think those are great points. And I think you mentioning implicit bias is kind of getting after kind of some of the solutions now of, we realize that there is some perception, misunderstandings maybe, that maybe if I'm in the Army, I can't form a family, I can't be, do some of the other goals that I have in my life. And so I think getting at that perception, like Chago mentioned, societally, but also within the Army, right? You mentioned, Sergeant Major Salcedo, that you were kind of looking at, hey, is there a quota that they're trying to keep here? There was a lot of misunderstandings out there. And I think getting after that bias might be one of the solutions. Sergeant Cox and I here, we were talking about it, and I had him take an implicit bias test that they're available online, that you can go look them up, to see that, hey, you know what? Maybe there is some bias that I have because of my upbringings, because of whatever, my environment, my belief system, that I may have some implicit bias that I may not be aware of. And so I think addressing that throughout the Army may be a solution for that. So I'll give you a chance to respond to that and your thoughts on that.
Sure. I like how you had him take a test. But yeah, and it's having conversations like these. It's having conversations like these that open up, you know, those with, it opens up the aperture of the way people think, of being able to look at things through a different lens. Because, you know, all of us here on this call had different paths to get to where we are today. And that echoes for everyone who's in our organization. So being able to have that open-mindedness, I think, is going to be key. And that ties into having leaders, right, with high emotional intelligence and those empathetic leaders. Because we're going to have soldiers in our formation who come from a different walk of life. And just because I haven't been there, I've got to be able to understand, maybe, you know, in a way where I can still be that compassionate leader and, you know, help guide you in the right direction.
No, but I think we're talking about solutions to some of these things and identifying that there may be some bias. It just makes you self-aware, right? And it makes you emotionally intelligent.
Yeah, self-awareness. That's one of the attributes, right, of a good leader, is having that self-awareness. And yeah, no, absolutely.
So I think at this point I'll transition a little bit. So in this next segment, there's no doubt, Sergeant Major Saucedo, that your article generated an enormous amount of discussion on social media. It is a topic of discussion around the world. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions based on the comments that we gathered from those social media platforms. We're going to start with the idea of diversity versus principles of meritocracy with senior NCO promotions in mind. So the question really pertains to, what criteria do both of you think should be used to determine if someone is best suited for a leadership, senior leadership, or nominative role, regardless of gender?
So that's a great question. And so I think for these positions, right, I think we've got to look outside the quantitative data, like ACFT, those things, those are those hard tangibles. But I think we should also look at, how does this soldier, right, how does this leader take care of others? How does this leader take care of themselves? You know, H2F, holistic health and fitness. If that leader is not in the know or practicing, right, those five domains, that, especially now, right, going to LISCO, and those are the things, that's why we're doing this holistic health and fitness, because we're not going to have all these things. We've got to be able to be the war fighter that that the Army needs out there. So I think looking at those intangible skills that a leader has, and it might maybe tie into something similar to like the Sergeant Major Assessment Program, where they, you know, they go through these battery of tests. But I think we've got to look outside the quantitative data. Obviously, knowledge, skills, and abilities are always going to be key. Looking at well-rounded NCOs, I'll say, speaking from, you know, enlisted soldier standpoint, you know, looking at the key positions, the ASI, looking at the criteria, the qualities, all those things, but then also tying into, okay, great, this person looks good on paper, but how do they actually, can they talk to people? Do they have interpersonal skills? Can they influence beyond their internal circle?
What's your response to that, Sergeant Major Everett?
I think we 100% should promote based on merit. Our current promotions are based on potential. You know, do you have the potential to serve at the next level? And then we're selected for positions based on our knowledge, skills, attributes, and behaviors. But what I think is very, very important in that, when you throw in the diversity piece, and Sergeant Major Salceda mentioned it earlier, is mentorship and advocacy, right? So I get promoted based on my potential, a board of folks that don't even really know, don't know me other than my file, promote me based on my potential to serve at the next level. Then it's the mentorship that I have from my seniors that coach me and then advocate for me. And I'm speaking solely on the nominative level, but advocate for me to have the opportunity to interview, right? So I'll use myself as an example. Nickel Co. in the Sergeant's Major Academy Commandant position was not even on my radar. And the only reason it wasn't is just because I didn't think that was, you know, I had the knowledge, skills, attributes, and behaviors for this position, one. And two, it just wasn't something that I thought was kind of in my career path. So my advocate and my mentor at the time, the previous TRADOC Sergeant Major, Sergeant Major Hendricks, said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" You know, as he's doing his nominative counseling with me, and we're going over the positions that I think I am competitive to compete for versus what he thinks I'm competitive to compete for. And he says, "What do you think about this?" And I give him a really funny look, and I'm like, I don't know. And he was like, "You would be great." But it's just having someone, and he's like, "You should try." And it's having someone that sees potential in you that you don't see in yourself, and they give you the opportunity. I don't feel like it's our senior leader's job, nor do I want them to put me in a position based solely on my gender. I want them to give me an opportunity to be competitive, and then it's on me to secure that position. And, you know, luckily everything worked out for me and I'm still employed, you know. But I also use the vignette when I interviewed for ICO, and my old CG, he shares this story publicly so I can share it too, is on the interview, he asked me, "If I select you, what are your thoughts about being first female in my Corps Sergeant Major?" And that really took me aback, because I knew in the back of my head that if I was selected, I'd be the one, but I really didn't think it would be that big of a deal. And my first response was, "Sir, if you pick me because I'm a female, I'm disappointed in you." And then after it came out of my mouth, I was like, "Yep, I just probably boloed this interview for saying that." But he shares that because of how strongly I feel, and how the Army picks people based on their potential and their merit. And then when he called me to tell me I got the job, he said, "Hey, I want you to know that I did not pick you because you are a female. I picked you because you were the best athlete." And to me, that is the best compliment I could have ever received. And then, like I said before, the Army just gets lucky. You know, secondary to being the best athlete, I'm the best female athlete for the position. So that's my take on promotions in our enlisted ranks.
And that's what, one of the things I love about the Army is that even when it does find there is problems with the system, with the process, with the procedure, with policies, they do a hard look within the organization and they make changes for it. The last change that kind of that affected this kind of, I'll go back to it, is when we redacted the DA photos from centralized promotion boards. But I think there's still more steps that can be done, right? People are talking about redacting names to kind of avoid any kind of bias associated with names, and even, you know, pronouns from evaluation reports and things like that. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think this is the Army is a great place for assessing and promoting based on merit and potential, like you mentioned, Sergeant Major. And I just think that we need discussions like this to continue to find intricate details about policies or problems that are changed that could be improved. And I think the Army will listen to it if we have that kind of discourse.
Yeah, which when it comes to discourse, one of the big things being bounced around now is the Harding Project. And one of the aims is promoting professional discourse. And I think just like Sergeant Major Everett said, you know, when it came to your article, I think it was brave of you to send this to us and to publish it, because I think it's a conversation. You know, we need to have professional discourse on subjects that are sensitive like this, and maybe even race and other things like that. You know, I think it's important that we talk and that we talk about the challenges, talk about solutions. And explore, you know, everything that's associated with it, so that, you know, the Army, maybe we can come up with things that might even, you know, affect the Army sometime in the future. It really shows just how important it is that we talk about this subject.
100% agree. And piggybacking there off the challenges, one of the other things that came to mind, you know, as far as when, you know, writing this article, you know, I used to be on my full-time position, a sexual assault response coordinator. And, you know, one of my thoughts was, what happens, like, what if, right, female victims elected to leave the service and not finish their career because of some harmful behavior? And it doesn't even have to be a sexual assault. It could be, you know, gender discrimination, you name it, right? Sexual harassment, perhaps sexual assault. You know, how many more females would we have had to be in that pool, right? To throw their name in the hat, to be mentored, to be coached to where, you know, potentially maybe we do hit over the 20% mark of having senior females. And I think that is another, and it's a very touchy subject, I know, but it is something that has to be talked about and addressed. And, you know, the SHARP program has made strides, right, with policy updates and changes and changing the way they train, changing the way they educate leaders and getting folks. But the statistics, the numbers don't lie. And it is unfortunate that the majority of males are the perpetrators or the subjects. So I think that that is something that we have to, as senior leaders, be mindful of. We have to understand that there are some of those fears for, we'll say, some of our junior population who are female, or that maybe they've gone through it, didn't get the support that they needed. I think those are the conversations that we need to have as senior leaders. And I'll tell you, as an 88 Mike in a motor pool back in 97, there were different conversations being had. And, you know, this was way pre-sharp. So I'm not saying that we have not gotten better. We've gotten 100% better, which is, you know, why I'm still here. You know, I want to be one of those difference makers, the change maker who, you know, can help just with this article, right? It's sparking conversation. But I think we've got to have more of these conversations across the formation, across, you know, all branches of service to figure out how can we, you know, from preventing harmful behaviors that are going to retain, right? Because it all goes back to retention. Because if these soldiers are getting out of the army, then we're losing good folks who just either weren't supported or the process failed, or, you know, whatever it is that it may be, or, you know, you fill in the blank. There's probably a thousand, you know, answers for that. I think addressing those challenges and having senior leaders have those difficult conversations. I 100% believe that merit and knowledge, skills, abilities, that is why folks should be promoted. But I also, you know, I would like to see more females that are stepping up to the plate. And I mentioned in my paper, you know, it's females like Command Sergeant Major Everett here, right, who have succeeded in these roles. So it's not just putting a female in position for the sake of putting a female in position. No, it's you're finding those females who, like she had a mentor say, hey, I think you'd be great for this role. I think that is amazing. And I've had mentors like that in my lane. But I can tell you from having, you know, friends along the way and battle buddies, that's not always the case.
I believe sexual harassment and assault hurts the Army in general. And, you know, it's parents don't want to put their children into an organization where that's rampant. But I think that's a different problem, I think. And I'll turn the question to you, Sergeant Major Everett, on your thoughts on Sergeant Major Salcedo's comment.
So I will tell you, you know, you want to talk about professional discourse. That was the one part in the paper where I just kind of said, You know, I don't disagree with her statistics and I don't necessarily disagree with what she said, but I had an internal problem making the correlation between female senior NCO presence and sexual assault. And I understand the majority of the victims are female, and in the paper she was making the correlation how, you know, maybe we could have kept them in or how many of those got out. From my perspective, because it's all about how you see things, you know, I would zoom out and say, it's bigger than just sexual assault. And she mentioned it. It's all the harmful behaviors. You know, how many people, and for the sake of this discussion, we're talking about females, how many females exit the Army just because they had an overall bad experience, right? Just a bad, you know, and that includes all the harmful behaviors, bad leadership, whatever, right? So if you just kind of zoom out a little bit, I had a hard time making the correlation or really agreeing with, you know, maybe the correlation between the lack of female senior leader presence and the rate of sexual harassment, sexual assault in our formation. The other point, it's a different point, but what I thought was a very interesting point is she talked about assimilation. Sergeant Major, I'm not going to steal your thoughts on this. I would like for you to just talk about a little bit of that, because you do address it in your paper of how we may be part of the problem if we're assimilating.
So that ties into, and where I got that from was when I was going through my master's program some years ago, I did a paper on, sexual assault in the military. One of the things that came out was, that sometimes, and it's not all the time, and again, it's just, like you said, it's my perspective, but, that is a potential where it's just easier for some to just let it be, right? Because of whatever, like you said, bad leaders, they don't trust the leadership, they don't. So it's a lot easier to just deal with X. And I won't even say sexual assault, we'll just say any harmful behavior or say counterproductive type leadership. And so you just deal, has to do with them, wanting to serve their country. This is, like I said, this is the greatest army in the nation, in the world. But when those things happen, it's kind of twofold is, we have to ensure that soldiers don't feel like that, that they can speak up. And when they take things to a leader, a concern, an issue, that it is going to be addressed or, handled, whatever the case may be. Prime example, we'll just take it back to Private Salcedo, right? When she, years ago, well before, we had a lot of these special programs, is, there were the jokes and all of those things that happened. You just deal because you want to be part of the boys club, part of the, it is what it is. I understand that was a different culture back then. That's not the culture that we have today. Could it be that that's still happening in some organizations? I believe that.
But it takes everybody to kind of speak up, right? And that's just...
Yes. Oh, yes. It's not just the person who is being affected. It is the leaders in the organization. We talk about bystander intervention, in more than one program. It's things like that. And they don't even have to be, the Army says, we're all leaders, but it could be that brand new soldier coming into an organization who is now, they come into a climate where maybe they're not used to, and they hear stuff and taking it to a leader that they feel is going to be able to do something instead of just kind of like, oh, this is the way the norm is here. I'm just gonna, let it go. And so I don't believe that assimilation is by any means the norm, but I do want to acknowledge that, yeah, it is happening. If it wasn't, we wouldn't be having these statistics with harmful behaviors or seeing patterns of misconduct from certain folks because it was not addressed, or folks in organizations where, soldiers talk. Don't report because this leader isn't going to do, anything. Another thing is, when I speak to senior leaders from my civilian standpoint, is I let them know, hey, during a change of command, change of response, be mindful, you may end up getting reports because guess why? They didn't trust that prior leadership. So, it's very complex. This is not like a single focus, like this is it. And if we fix this, then no, it's very complex. Don't know if I answered your question, Sergeant Major, but that's my thoughts there on talking about like assimilating to certain cultures or organizational norms.
I appreciate that. And I, reading that in your paper, it made me reflect, as a junior soldier in a different type of army, I assimilated, I did the type of unit I was in, I wanted to be part of the team, and daggone it, if that means I had to listen to a couple of jokes, okay. It didn't bother me. Like, okay. Yeah. It was fine. I have four brothers, zero sisters. So I was used to hearing all those kind of things anyway. So it was normal for me. It didn't bother me. But when I was reading it, it just made me reflect. I was like, man, maybe back then I was part of the problem. I just really appreciate your perspective, your candor in writing this paper. It's a very polarizing, sometimes divisive topic. But I applaud you. I've had a great time talking to you about it. And I look forward to meeting you in person someday.
Yes, likewise. Thank you for your words, Sergeant Major.
To kind of wrap this up, Sergeant Major Everett, how can leaders ensure that all soldiers, regardless of their gender or background, feel valued, heard, and supported throughout their career?
It sounds so simple and it sounds so easy, but it's just engaged leadership. Being an empathetic leader, doing what's right for the soldier, accomplishing the mission, listening, being available. It's all the things that we know we should all be doing. It's hard because there isn't enough time in a day to do all the things, but it's being a good person. That's really all it boils down to. Be a good person. Treat everyone, regardless of rank, gender, ethnicity, with dignity and respect. As I, you know, hopefully very soon have a son joining the Army, I think, you know, how do I want my son to be treated? That puts it into perspective. I would not want anyone to talk to my son a certain way. And every one of us is someone's son or daughter. So we should take that when we're dealing with our soldiers.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. I also have a daughter, so I also think the same. I guess as another follow-up question, what do you think that female NCOs can do now to ensure their success in the Army?
I think they need to work hard. They need to be good teammates. They need to know their craft. And they need to have a voice. Sergeant Major Sauceda, in her paper, she said, it's not enough to be at the table. You got to have a voice. So when you have the opportunity to have a seat at the table, or if someone asks you your opinion, you got to be willing to speak up. That's not just female soldiers. That's all leaders. If you want to be successful, you got to get smart on what you're talking about. You got to be able to get your point across tactfully. And you just got to be a good person, treat people with dignity and respect. And I would just tell females, you know, in particular, the sky is the limit. There is nothing that is holding you back in our Army systems and processes from, you know, becoming the Sergeant Major of the Army if you're willing to put in the effort. You know, we've had females interview and compete for Sergeant Major of the Army. So it's happening. You just got to have the right knowledge, skills, attributes, behaviors. You got to be willing to put your name in the hat, and you got to be willing to work extra hard. So no one's going to give it to you by virtue of your gender. You got to be willing to work for it. So that would be my one piece of advice to our female soldiers.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. Remember to put your knowledge to the page, submit articles, and get published with the NCO Journal. Don't forget to check our webpage. Follow us on social media. We'll catch you next time on the NCO Journal podcast.